Are you ready?
Oxford is getting dumped on right now at this 1 o'clock hour. Our very own Michael Quirk is motoring down Interstate 40, headed to Nashville for the Rebel 6 p.m. Central Time SEC Tournament game tonight with Alabama. Michael, first and foremost, we want to make sure you're safe out there. How are the road conditions?
It's wild, especially in when I was still in the northern part of Mississippi. The water level was, I mean, all the farms up there were flooded, and the water level was getting up near the bottom of the bridges that I was going over. So it was getting a little sketchy, and it's not much better here in Tennessee, where it's just pouring down on me right now.
Well, I know back in my hometown of Cleveland, Mississippi, I saw this morning that they've already declared a state of emergency over that way due to the floodwaters. And the crazy thing is, you know, the next 24, 48 hours, there's more to come, guys. There's going to be a lot of rainfall on the state of Mississippi in the coming hours. And, you know, it makes you wonder if they're going to get baseball and softball in Oxford this weekend. Certainly every effort will be made to play those games. But Mother Nature not cooperating right now. Michael, this is a do-or-die, perhaps an elimination game for the Ole Miss basketball team tonight against Alabama. There's no NIT guarantee, even though the Rebels have 120. What is on the line for Andy Kennedy and his basketball team at Bridgestone Arena tonight, 6 p.m. tip?
Right now, I'd be I feel like they feel pretty comfortable that if they lose even tonight, that they will be in that NIT field. But a win tonight would certainly solidify that and improve their chances of hosting in the NIT. And, of course, they beat Alabama earlier this year, the first game inside the new arena. But Alabama's struggling. They're struggling lately. You look about 2-3 weeks ago, Alabama was firmly in that NCAA tournament field. And the way they played down the stretch, I think that they're in the same boat as Ole Miss at the moment, where they have to win on Sunday in Nashville in order to get into the Big Dance. So it'll be two teams who are really hungry, who are scraping to try and stockpile as many wins as possible and try and make a type of miracle run to get to that Sunday game. And it's really going to be a desperate game tonight. You have a lot of guys who they don't want this to be their last game, and definitely don't want it to be their last SEC game. You have guys like Stephon Moody, Tomas Cielo, Martavius Newby, Anthony Perez, all are going to be laying it all on the floor tonight against Alabama.
Well, you know, and the vibe seems to be, and listening to Andy Kennedy talk yesterday during shoot around, is that this is it for Ole Miss tonight. I mean, if they lose, I don't think anyone feels particularly well about their opportunity of hosting an NIT game if they were to lose to Alabama tonight. Because, you know, Alabama, much in the same boat, even though Ole Miss has beaten them head-to-head, Bama, with their RPI rating as well as their strength of schedule, if they were to win tonight, you would almost certainly think they get in the NIT before Ole Miss does, Michael.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams that are sort of in flux right now as it goes to the NCAA tournament bubble, which, if things don't fall their way there, will be NIT teams, and teams like Ole Miss who are on an NIT bubble, who Ole Miss isn't going to accept an invitation to the CBI. They're not going to pay to go to any tournament that's not the NCAA tournament or NIT. And so it could be it for Ole Miss tonight. But you have Florida, who has not played well down the stretch, they were firmly into the tournament, and you really didn't think that there was any way they could play themselves out. But the way they played down the stretch, I believe they lost four in a row before taking down Mizzou over the weekend. That if Florida loses to Arkansas, who they're tied with in the standings at 9-9, then I think Florida's an NIT team. I don't think there's any way Florida gets in the NCAA tournament going out in the first round. You have Vanderbilt, who Vanderbilt's a bubble team in the NCAA tournament. If Vanderbilt goes down first or in their first meeting, then, I mean, Vanderbilt's very possibly an NIT team. You have Georgia, who's likely an NIT team if they get a win tonight, but they're sort of on that Ole Miss bubble. So there's a 5-6 teams that could make it into the NIT, or there's a few of them that could make it to the NCAA. But, you know, a lot's going to be decided in Nashville, and it's going to be very interesting to see because, like I said, there's a lot of desperate teams going up to Tennessee, and unless you're Texas A&M or Kentucky or South Carolina, you don't feel particularly great about where you stand against other teams trying to make it into the NCAA tournament. Another team is LSU. LSU looks like they'll have to win it all in Nashville to make it to the NCAA tournament. If not, LSU may even have to fight to get into the NIT or get to an NIT host spot. And so you have a lot of teams that are in flux at the moment who are going to be in the Music City this weekend.
All right, Dave Bevin, from your perch you're sitting on and looking at this Ole Miss basketball team heading into this showdown, and it is a showdown with Alabama tonight. If the Rebels were to knock Alabama off tonight and move on to their grand prize of facing the Kentucky Wildcats on Friday, is this win tonight enough that they would feel somewhat comfortable as an NIT selection, just saying that they pick win 21 up tonight, they lose to Kentucky tomorrow, and they're 21-12. Is that good enough to get them into the NIT this year with the new selection criteria in which the NCAA is controlling the tournament? The NIT tournament is controlled now by the NCAA, and there are some mid-major regular season league champions that get automatic berths to the NIT, which means there are fewer at-large spots.
You know, as Michael pointed out, you know, it will be tough for Ole Miss if they go in and win tonight and then get knocked out by Kentucky. And that has to do with, like how Michael said, you know, there's so many SEC teams right now that are sitting on that bubble, and if they're knocked out early, then they're looking at possible NIT bids as well, like LSU, as he mentioned, LSU, Georgia, you know, those teams, maybe even possibly Vandy. And it will be very hard for Ole Miss to sit in that group and be like one of five teams that are looking into the NIT tournament. And as you mentioned, David, with all those other teams from conferences, you know, conference champions getting that automatic bid, it's going to be very hard for Ole Miss, you know, to get into that NIT selection. And I think, you know, a win over Kentucky would definitely, in my opinion, and it would give an RPI boost, would, you know, have a better chance if they were to, you know, beat Kentucky and then, you know, move on to the next round and be eliminated.
I think they need to be playing Saturday, guys, to lock up an NIT berth. And I think they have to play on Sunday. I don't know if they necessarily have to win on Sunday, but I think they've got to be playing on Sunday in order to get to the NCAA tournament. And I say that because, in all probability, if they're playing on Sunday, they will have defeated Alabama, Kentucky, and South Carolina back-to-back-to-back. And that may be enough, considering they won 3 out of 40 in the regular season, to let them squeak into the NCAA field without winning an SEC conference championship. But there's a lot of intrigue. So, you know, the bottom line is they must win. If they lose tonight, most likely no postseason basketball for Ole Miss, whether you're talking the NCAA or the NIT. So, again, that game tips off at 6 o'clock tonight. It is on the SEC Network. Our very own Michael Quirk will be courtside, bringing you all of the action on Rebels 247, assuming he doesn't have to trade his car in for a boat to make it on into the Music City this afternoon. Well, Michael, the skies held off long enough last night for the Ole Miss baseball team to get game number 13 in at Swayze Field. It was a dark and dusty day, but the Rebels found a way once again to do in a midweek opponent. 12-1 now on the year, and with Grambling set to come in for a weekend series, and you certainly think the Rebels not only could but should sweep Grambling, assuming Mother Nature cooperates, this team's got a chance to get off to a 15-1 start. This weekend series and the midweek game's not going to help the RPI very much for this Ole Miss baseball team, but nevertheless, 15-1 is 15-1. Michael, take us to Swayze last night. What did you see out of Mike Bianco's group?
You know, there may be some frustration from some folks that follow the Rebel baseball team in that in all four midweek games, they've had to come from behind to get the win. They were down 3-2 going into the bottom of the eighth against Arkansas State and had to walk off. They were down 6-0 and I believe the second inning against Memphis, had to come from behind there. They were down 1-0 on Tuesday, and then they were down by 2 runs in the bottom of the seventh last night. And, you know, of course, you like on paper to be blowing these teams out, because Ole Miss is obviously infinitely more talented than SEMO, Arkansas State, and Memphis. But on the bright side of that, the resiliency that you develop by coming from behind in these games and knowing that you're never out of a ball game. And I'll tell you what, if you look at the players, if you look around the stadium, there really wasn't anyone that was overly concerned come the seventh inning. I didn't even usually when Ole Miss is up big, say in the Florida International Series, I start going through my story and start piecing it together for the post game and, you know, putting some things here and there. But I didn't even start my write-up last night because I felt, you know, this really doesn't seem like a game Ole Miss is going to lose. And sure enough, you get the big home run from Will Golston and then the big pinch hit from Holt Herzog to put Ole Miss over the top. And that's sort of been the calling card for this team so far, is that never-say-die attitude where they have come from behind and won 5 different games this year and are really putting themselves in a position where they're never out of a ball game. And you have to look at the bats have to get going in those type of games in order for you to overcome the deficit and get the win. But equally as important is throwing up zeros in the bullpen. And the Ole Miss bullpen has an ERA under 2 this year. And it's really been there are a lot of guys that you can point to and say, that guy's coming in, we can rely on. Wyatt Short has a 0 ERA so far this season. Dallas Wolfolk, true freshman, he's lights out. The guy's hitting 96. Will Golston told me he's just glad that inter-squad scrimmages are over for the year so he doesn't have to face Dallas Wolfolk anymore, because he was just up there just swinging at nothing against him. And he has a 0 ERA, and I believe he's appeared in 6 different games so far this year. There's of course some things they need to work on. Wasn't the best hitting night last night for Ole Miss. Of course, you'd like to see better fielding. 3 errors, including 2 uncharacteristic errors by Colby Bortles over a third. But, you know, you work out those kinks as the season goes along, and while the defensive struggles that you've seen in a couple of games early in the year, you won't see those late in the year, but what you will see is a team who believes they can win any ball game they're in against any opponent they're against and at any time in the game, no matter the deficit. And I think that's going to be very important when you get to May and June.
The intangible, certainly. We talked about that yesterday or the day before yesterday. You know, something that doesn't show up in the stat column is that grit, you know, that ability to find yourself when you're trailing. that can be very, very important once SEC play starts, and this team certainly has it. Again, 12-1 on the season, a hot start for the Ole Miss baseball Rebels. And I got to confess, I slid over to the Ole Miss softball complex yesterday, and I caught the Rebels playing Youngstown State in softball. Mike Smith's club is off to a 20-3 start. Best start ever for the Ole Miss softball program in year two under Smith, who, by the way, won his 50th game in his short two-year stint here at Ole Miss yesterday against Youngstown State. They can hit. They've got the pitching. They're playing pretty much error-free softball right now, and it is certainly good to see Ole Miss looking good on the softball diamond. Now, you can look at that 20-3 record, and I was talking to some other media types the other day, and somebody was joking, well, what's the over and under that they finish over 500 for the entire season this year? And, you know, again, they're off to a 20-3 start. That was, I think I took that as a little bit of a shot at maybe the pre-conference schedule that they've played. They do have a win over Hawaii. They have a couple of wins over Penn State. But it's going to get real this weekend. The Missouri Tigers come to Oxford for a three-game series for the Ole Miss softball program, and I think you'll get a really good gauge of actually where they're at. They're a very young team, too, by the way. So 20-3 is 20-3 no matter how you shake it up. So good to see Ole Miss doing quite well in all of the diamond sports. Of course, spring football is in the air. The Rebels holding their sixth and final practice before spring break this afternoon. And a little bird told me that the guys were told this would be the most physical practice that Ole Miss has held since Hugh Freeze has been the football coach here this afternoon. So hopefully they'll come through it healthy. And have a great spring break and come back and wrap it up with nine more practices. But, you know, the things that you're seeing out there right now, are there any surprises? I don't know if I'd call them surprises. I think the biggest surprise for me, and Dave, you had a chance to watch this Monday when you were at practice. The biggest surprise for me is Miles Hartsfield. This kid is one of the eight early enrollees. I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to play this fall. He is versatile. He can play all of the safety positions. He can even play cornerback if needed. You've seen his body change since he's arrived at Ole Miss in January. He's gained 12 pounds. Corey Batoon, the safety coach, singing his praises. He's interchangeable at almost every position in the secondary. There's no way you're going to keep Miles Hartsfield, a true freshman or not, off the field this fall. Dave, I know you had a chance to see him a little bit. That's my impression of him. What is your take on Miles in the early going?
Oh, I agree with you, David. You just can't keep this kid off the football field this fall. He is highly talented, and as you mentioned, you know, he's gained some weight in the weight room, and you know, talking with Freeze and Corey Batoon on Monday, both singing their praises, as you mentioned, about Miles Hartsfield. He could play any position so far in the secondary, which is remarkable. You know, right now Ole Miss coaching staff is liking him at that Husky position, which would be really good, because over the past couple of seasons, you know, the questions have been out there, you know, with Tony Connor. Who's going to back up Tony Connor? And, you know, that was a big concern last week or last season when Connor went down with a knee injury. And, you know, Ole Miss had to do a lot of shuffling in their secondary just to, you know, build some depth in there. They completely had to shift around Mike Hilton, Trey Elston, and you know, Hampton. All those guys had to shift around into positions just to fill that one position with the depth that they needed. And, you know, this is a big plus for Ole Miss. And Hartsfield as well, you know, he's got the speed. You know, in his recruitment, I talked with his prep school coach, Dick Bell, out there at in Massachusetts, where he went to prep school at, and the speed he can record, he's recorded up to a 4.29 on AstroTurf. The kid's got speed. He's been if you look at his highlight film, it's the first 2 to 3 minutes are nothing but special teams. So I really think Ole Miss will give him a look at special teams as well.
Miles Hartsfield looks to be the earliest of the bloomers of the 8 early enrollees. Shea Patterson has looked the part of the number one quarterback in the nation through the first several practices. Maybe swimming a little bit like all the other freshmen when it comes to the terminology and running the plays and everything, but there's no doubt Shea Patterson will be ready this fall. Throws just a beautiful football. Great touch. The biggest thing about Shea is how quick his release is. Incredibly quick. And it gives, you would assume, Hugh Freeze and Dan Werner a little bit of peace of mind when it comes to Chad Kelly. And that's not a knock on Jason Pellerin, who could certainly contribute this fall at the quarterback position if needed. But you've got a guy that can drive your race car, so to speak, in the bullpen if, God forbid, anything were to happen to Chad Kelly. And I go back to last year, and it really felt like to me they were protecting Kelly a little bit from exposure to injury in the first half of the season, and then they loosened up with him in the second half of the season and let him kind of work his magic a little bit in the improv department. That's where Chad Kelly got most of his rushing yards, was the latter end of the season. And I think you're going to be able to see Chad Kelly unleashed from the get-go this fall, simply because you know you've got another guy that can get the football into the hands of your receivers if, again, heaven forbid, anything were to happen to Chad Kelly. And maybe not just one other guy in Shea Patterson, but two other guys with Jason Pellerin. I think you have a two-headed monster behind Chad Kelly that would be sufficient and serviceable if Kelly were not in the ballgame. Michael, what do you think about that? I mean, do you think you see Ole Miss let Kelly have a little bit more freedom in using his legs to make things happen from the get-go this fall, unlike what we all saw last year?
Yeah, absolutely. You saw how much the field opened up for Kelly once he started running the ball. And right when you hit that that second half of the season, especially once, you know, you got Laramie Tunsil back, when Chad was given more design runs and options to run, and he really took away part of the defense because they had to watch him. He is a quick guy. He is an elusive guy, and he doesn't go down very easily. And so getting Chad Kelly into the open field really makes the defense have to be aware of him as a running threat, and it gave more space to his receivers as well as the backs. And you saw how much better that offense was running toward the end of the year. I mean, you look at the Arkansas game or the Mississippi State game and compare it to Florida or Vandy. I mean, they were just so much more efficient and so much more explosive. And you really have to think that Chad Kelly will start this year running the ball more. And what has to make you feel good as the coaching staff is, like you said, if God forbid anything happens to Chad Kelly, you do have two guys who are very, very bright, very high football IQ, who Jason Pellerin's already been in the system. He knows the system. Shea Patterson comes in early. He has a lot of time to learn the playbook. And you have to think with a guy who's as advanced as Kelly is, or as Patterson is, that he's going to get it down pretty quickly. And you have two guys that are very athletic, who know the system, high football IQ, have a lot of arm strength, that if something did happen to Chad Kelly, it's not a dire situation like, unfortunately, it may have been, you know, last season where you didn't feel as comfortable with the backup. I certainly think that you'll see Kelly start to run a lot. He took his body can take a beating. You saw him in the first half of the season where he took a lot of hits. Alabama and Florida in particular, he took a lot of hard hits. And so I think they'll unleash the Kraken. I think Kelly will get a lot of options to run with his feet there.
Yeah, that's the way I see it as well. I think you're going to see a much more dual threat type of Chad Kelly on the field from the get-go this year. And, you know, perhaps he's a guy, I mean, I don't think it's ever been done before, but could Chad Kelly be a guy that could throw for 4,000 and run for 1,000? I mean, that kind of seems preposterous a little bit, you know, to think that in this day and age of great defenses in the SEC that somebody could do that. But really, if you look back, the last five games, I don't have the stats right here in front of me, but I think Chad Kelly ran for more than 400 yards over his last five games. So if he stays healthy, and as Michael said, his legs open up the field in front of him, and they do that all year long, what kind of monster year could Chad Kelly put together? And the Heisman odds released this week, the Vegas Heisman odds, Chad Kelly setting at 20-1. But as we've talked about before, guys, if he goes to Orlando and leads Ole Miss to a victory over Florida State, and they beat Alabama for the third consecutive year, and they knock off Georgia, for all of that to happen, you got to figure Chad Kelly's got to have some monster numbers to start the 2016 season. And he's on top of the Heisman heat. If Ole Miss is 4-0 at the end of September, Chad Kelly's odds on the Heisman will increase tremendously. And don't let this little bit slip you either. It's a story the media is going to love to tell. Bad boy turned good boy, kicked out of the Clemson program, found a home at Ole Miss after JUCO, nephew of NFL great and Hall of Famer Jim Kelly. It's the Cinderella story of the 2016 season. The only thing that has to happen is Chad Kelly's got to lead Ole Miss to victories. Is that a 10-win season, or is it more? I don't think he wins the Heisman if the Rebels only win 9. I think they have to at least win 10. That's always a big factor in who's going to win the Heisman Trophy, is how well your team is doing. But looking at the numbers he put up as a junior, if he duplicates those numbers and adds some to them, I tell you, I just think he's going to be right there in the running to go to New York City at the tail end of everything. What's the last Heisman Trophy candidate or hopeful Ole Miss had? Let's scratch our head on that. Obviously, Eli Manning, Deuce McAllister. Anybody in between those guys?
Devin Snead there for a while.
I guess you could put McCluster into that. And McCluster, the way he finished out the second half of that 2009 season, he got a little into the conversation, but nothing too serious.
Well, that's because you go back to the 2009 season, and I go back to that Thursday night game in South Carolina, where Ole Miss is ranked in the top five nationally, primetime game, and I really think someone tapped Houston Nutt on the shoulder in the late in the third quarter and said, hey, you know we got Dexter over here, right? Because he did not use him until the very end of that game. I think the final score was like 16-10, something like that. But that was one of the most perplexing things with Houston that I just couldn't figure out. And, you know, he later said, well, he was trying to protect him from getting injured. But, my God, he's there to help you win ball games. Use him, man. And he was not used that night until the fourth quarter. Ole Miss rallied furiously. But it was too little too late. And, again, you go back to what if McCluster had been turned loose at the beginning of the year? I mean, what would have happened? He ran for 1,000, caught for over 500 that year. Could have been in the conversation perhaps a little bit more at the end of the year. But that's so long ago now. Seems so long ago, doesn't it? Doesn't that 2-10 2011 season seem like forever ago, guys?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I had a lobotomy, so all the Houston Nutt years are out of my brain.
Well, you know, things change and often change quickly, and I would say where this program is setting now to where it was setting in the fall of 2011, the change came very, very quickly. And, you know, going back to spring practice, let me tell you, these guys look, this team looks like a legitimate top 10 football program now. 4 or 5 years ago, it did not. You look out there now, and there is talent stock at every position. Maybe not as much as you want at some positions. Linebacker, but there's help coming. But it's unbelievable at the talent at every spot on the field. Big-time talent compared to what it was prior to Hugh Freeze's arrival. And that's the reason for the turnaround, folks. It's great to have a stadium expansion, and I do want to talk a little bit about that in today's podcast. It's great to have the cool uniform changes and the great marketing department behind the Ole Miss athletic program, but it all boils down to recruiting. You're winning those games during recruiting season. It's the Jimmy and the Joes as much as it is, even more so than the X's and the O's, because you don't coach in the SEC unless you can coach. Everybody in the SEC can coach. They can draw it up. It's who you're putting out there on that field that makes the biggest difference. And the 2017 class, a little slow for some to matriculate, only 3 commits in it at this point. How many will they take? That is up in the air. I think probably between 20 and 24, depending on how several things turn out, part of which is this NCAA investigation and how many scholarship losses the program will sustain. We're not expecting it to be very many. Nothing has changed on that front either, folks. We're still expecting it to be an early fall finality to everything. That seems to be the way things are kind of going right now. I don't think you're going to have any earth-shattering revelations come out from here. The investigation is pretty much closed. It's in the negotiation part of it now. Whatever appeals may come from it, whatever arguments Ole Miss may have against the NCAA findings, that's what's going on. And then we'll know. We'll know. The self-reported violations came out last week. Daniel Pauling of the Clarion Ledger introduced those through the Freedom of Information Act. Nothing earth-shattering in that. Nothing we didn't already know. So we just wait and find out. But will it have an effect on recruiting? I'd probably be dumb to say it wouldn't have some effect, that it's not having some effect now. Do you know that your opponents are using it against you? That's just how it's going to be. But the overall effect, I think, will be minute. That's what I believe. So, spring break is upon us. There will be no spring practice next week. They'll come back with 9 more. No Grove Bowl. Chucky Mullins ceremony set for April the 9th. It's a breakfast inside the 1810 Grill at the Manning Center. Dave, I know you've been doing some thinking about who will wear number 38 this fall. We've got a story that Dave has written that will be up on Rebels 247 soon with some of his candidates to wear the coveted number 38 jersey. Preview that for us a little bit, if you would, Dave. I mean, who do you think is going to wear the Chucky Mullins number this fall for the Rebels?
Well, that award, David, as everybody well knows, it is awarded to an upperclassman senior on the defensive side of the ball each year. And, you know, it's hand-selected by the coaches, you know, who they think is that guy who's going to be, you know, that leader for the team. And my top candidate right now, David, is Tony Connor. If you look back at his career, his performances on the field in that 2013-2014 season was very spectacular. Heading into 2015, he was one of those coveted players for Ole Miss, if adding Tunsil, Treadwell, and Kim Dichie as, you know, a possible first-round NFL draft pick.
Connor had a knee injury in 2015, set his season back a good bit. So, you know, he's still recovering from that. But if you look at how Tony Connor presents himself in the limelight, you only see him in the limelight as far as his production in shoulder pads. And we've mentioned it before, I don't even think Tony Connor has a social media account. In this day and age, it's possibly a good thing. But he presents himself quiet, you know, straight to business. And when you see him out there on the field, he is a leader amongst his position groups. And, that would be my top candidate, David. And you can also look at Fadal Brown as a good possibility. Isaac Gross. I watched Isaac on Monday. He's still, being limited in spring practices. He's still recovering from that neck injury. But, you know, as he's walking around out there on the field, David, he almost looks like a coach out there with that defensive line group and, encouraging those guys, coaching those guys. And you definitely see the leadership from Gross out there on the field. So he is definitely a top candidate. And then, you know, you have some other defensive backs. Carlos Davis, is a good possibility as well. So those right now, those look to be my top candidates. Terry Caldwell, can't overlook him. DJ Jones, Tamari Strong, those guys are seniors. So it's a coveted award that every spring the Ole Miss fan base just really looks forward to. And it's really a guessing game. And the fans, they love to guess, who they think that candidate's going to be. And like I said, right now, I don't know what y'all's perspective on it, but Tony Connor is my top pick right now.
Yeah, I would say the top two candidates, as far as I'm concerned, would be Tony Connor and Isaac Gross. Both of them South Panola products, and both of them outstanding leaders in different kind of ways. Tony, as you mentioned, is a much more lead-by-example, quieter young man. Isaac is a very vocal leader. Both of them part of the heart and soul of that Landshark defense, and the Rebels certainly need them to be this fall. Isaac up to 260 pounds now and has not lost any quickness in terms of his get-off. And that's going to be a different Isaac Gross, folks, if he can stay healthy. When you're talking about 260 pounds shooting gaps as opposed to when he was playing at 230 and 235 pounds. So that's something to definitely look forward to. All the reports on Tony Connor have been wonderful. Prognosis is great. He could probably go this spring if they wanted him to. They're not going to risk it. They're not going to chance rushing him back. So Tony will not see any action this spring. All right, guys. As Michael is getting closer and closer to Bridgestone Arena by the minute, time for a prediction round. Michael, how will Andy Kennedy's Ole Miss Rebels respond tonight? Will they get the win over Alabama? How do you see it playing out?
I think we'll see sort of a typical night that we've come to expect from Stephon Moody toward the end of the year. I think we'll have about 24 points on, maybe 6 of 18 shooting, something in that range. And I think Sebastian Saiz will have a big game. He's played incredibly well the last few go-rounds. I think he'll have a double-double. And I don't know who will be, but like someone's going to step up, maybe Tomas Diello. We'll have a big game, or maybe Rasheed Brooks will snap the snide, and I think Ole Miss comes out on top 74-66 tonight.
74-66, we're marking it down. Dave Bevin, shoot.
I have to agree with Michael on this one. I believe Ole Miss they see it. How the media sees it, how the fans see it. This is a do or die situation for them. And Andy Kennedy, if you look at history, his teams have done fairly well under pressure, and they're going to come into this game tonight saying that this is their last shot, and you definitely want to see guys like Stephon Moody you know, to finish out the season in the postseason, whether it's NIT or NCAA tournament. So I think Moody's going to come in tonight and have a very strong night, put that team on the back of his shoulders. But you're still going to see good performances from, you know, Sebastian Saiz. I say Ole Miss, I would say it's going to be close to Michael's score, probably about 75-62 Ole Miss.
Michael, I think he just prices righted you there.
I know. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I gave him a dollar over him. Yeah.
He was right on you right there, so we'll see what happens tonight. Overall, Alabama leads this series 118-57. On neutral floors, Alabama and Ole Miss has met 12 times, with Alabama winning 9 of those 12. But Ole Miss has won the last two meetings. The last one, of course, coming on January 7th of this year, the grand opening of the Pavilion, where the Rebels topped the Tide 82-74. That game tips off at 6 p.m. Central Time tonight. For those of you not in Nashville, it will be televised on the SEC Network with John Saunders, one of my favorite play-by-play guys, handling the call tonight for the SEC Network. Of course, also on the Ole Miss Radio Network with David Kellum and Keith Carter doing the color. Satellite radio, Sirius XM, 145 on Sirius, 190 on XM. And, of course, Michael Quirk will be courtside, and he'll break it all down for you post-game tonight, as well as our very own John Bowen will be there as well. John will come back, and we'll have video of Andy Kennedy and the players in the post-game press conference. And Michael, we might even twist your arm to hook up with John so you can give us an inside Bridgestone Arena video recap of what you watched there tonight. I know everybody would look forward to that.
I'll run a comb through my hair and get on that.
That's it. That's it for us today. We're going to leave it. When Michael Quirk is talking about combing his hair, we'll leave it at that. So,
I have to mention, y'all forgot one big name in the Chucky Mullins race. John Youngblood. Where was the mention of John Youngblood?
Oh, yeah.
Youngblood.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking about hair there. Youngblood cut his hair off. Yeah. What about John Youngblood, Dave?
Yeah, he's mentioned in my article. The name did pop up in my head. And, you know, if you ask Chris and Kiffin, he gets on to, you know, not mentioning Youngblood enough. Throughout his whole career, he's been a very underrated
player. He's always
player
in position.
And he is. But he's very highly talented. He's definitely a candidate as well.
Hey, before we go, just real quick to add some perspective on something, I want to ask you guys this. Dave, I'll start with you. And real quick, you don't have to elaborate. Out of all of the departed players from the 2015 season, and there are three of them that are projected to go in the first round, who's Ole Miss going to miss the most?
It's got to start with Laramie Tunsil. I know Greg Little is coming in. I won't elaborate much. I know Greg Little's coming in, but he's still got to prove it on the field. Tunsil proved it on the field. I'll feel more comfortable after fall camp to see where Little's at. I mean,
Michael, who will they miss the most?
I got to say, it's not going to be one of the first rounders for me. I got to think C.J. Johnson. What that guy brings to the practice field, just watching him command the defense on Monday through Friday, he gets everyone ready to play. He's very disciplined, an incredible leader. And, of course, he was a great middle linebacker and had some versatility at the end. So I think they'll miss C.J.
I'm going with Mike Hilton. Because I've seen what losing the traffic cop in your secondary, a la Cody Pruitt, can do early in a season. And Mike Hilton was the traffic cop in the Ole Miss secondary, making sure everyone was lined up, making sure everyone was on the right page and different coverage schemes. And I think that's going to be missed severely early on for Ole Miss. It's kind of interesting that, and I agree with both of you guys. You know, what C.J. Johnson brought in terms of his tenacity and his heart to that Landshark defense is certainly going to be missed. And Laramie Tunsil on the left side, well, if you want to know how much he was missed, just look at the production of the offense before he got back from a suspension and look at what they did afterwards. I think both of those are good choices. Interesting, though, that none of the three of us said Laquon Treadwell, and I think that's simply because the cupboard's not bare behind Laquon. He won't be replaced. You can't replace a talent like that. But they do have guys who are serviceable and very, very talented who are going to become stars in their own right in that receiving core. And nobody said Robert Kendiche. You know, and that's generally what the national talking heads are going to be writing about this Ole Miss football team in the preseason is, oh, my God, they lost Laramie Tunsil, they lost Laquon Treadwell, and they lost Robert Kendiche. Outside of Tunsil, I don't think there's a lot of concern in terms of the wide receiving core because there's talent there. And then Kendiche is certainly a great defensive tackle, but you've got Breland Speaks and DJ Jones there too, who may be the best D-tackle tandem in the SEC this fall. So I kind of can go with Dave on Laramie Tunsil. He's going to be difficult to replace. He is a once-in-a-lifetime left tackle for your program. But interesting that Laquon Treadwell, Robert Kendiche, was not picked by any of the three of us. And, you know, it's not all about your NFL draft projectability when it comes to what you're going to miss on a college football field. We'll do closing thoughts real quick. Let's start with you, Michael, and we'll try to shut this thing down for the second time today.
I just want to talk about how great the freshman pitchers for Ole Miss have been. They've been very, very impressive. It may get lost a little bit in the shuffle. Obviously, look at the great start as a team. We've seen some great offensive performances from Tate Blackman, J.B. Woodman, and you have a preseason All-American and Errol Robinson. The starting staff has been excellent. But you have just a flurry of freshman pitchers, the most Mike Bianco's ever brought in 1 year. You have Dallas Wolfogue, zero ERA, coming in, shutting it down at the end. You have Andy Pagnazzi, who got his first start and pitched terrific, four innings, no earned runs. Only got pulled because of a pitch count. He had 57 pitches, got pulled after the fourth. A lot of different guys are giving a lot of innings. Connor Green, Andrew Lowe, James MacArthur, a lot of guys who can pitch at that back end. And, follow me on Twitter. I'll be going over all my Nashville exploits during the game and pregame. I'll give you some Andy Kennedy tidbits as well. And so follow me on Twitter. We'll have some fun tonight.
All right, Dave, closing thoughts.
You know, I'm going to talk a little bit of baseball like how Michael did while we were on the show. I looked at this interesting stat. So just think about this for a second. 2 years ago, Ole Miss 2014 season, when they went to the College World Series, that regular season start, they started the season 11-2. And this season, Ole Miss has started the season 12-1. So there's definitely a lot of excitement building around this Ole Miss baseball team. And, you know, the preseason of that year, Ole Miss started that preseason as, you know, that underdog fifth-place prediction in the SEC West, just like how it was this year. So a lot of excitement going around in Clayton right now. And as you mentioned, David, you know, the Ole Miss softball team, give those girls credit because they started off the year best in school history. They've won 12 straight. Mike Smith's doing an incredible job as head coach there. And, you know, they do have a tough opponent this weekend. They're really going to get their test when number 13 Missouri comes to town when they open up SEC play. So it'll be, you know, a real interesting matchup to see there. And then spring football, the excitement is around the air with spring football. And as you mentioned, David, you know, these past 2 years, I've never seen a more talented Ole Miss football team up close than I have ever before in Ole Miss football history. All the years that I've followed them these past couple of years, I've never seen a more talented team, and that's just a testimony to what Hugh Freeze and his staff has done to build this program, build the brand, and, you know, do a tremendous job in recruiting.
We'll see what happens with the Ole Miss softball team, 20-3, as we've mentioned in this podcast today, but the SEC has arrived for them on their schedule, and honestly, I mean, just to be brutal, you'll see if they're pretenders or contenders with this 20-3 mark. Again, they really haven't beaten anybody of any national significance in the early going. Missouri Tigers roll into town tomorrow, and if Mother Nature permits, we'll get to see how they stack up against a pretty good SEC foe. Grambling State in Oxford for Ole Miss baseball this weekend. Again, that's going to be left up to Mama Nature and whether or not she keeps dumping the wet stuff on the Oxford area. And right now, there's a river running out in front of my house in the street as the rain is continually pounding the ground here in God's country. Recruiting, you're starting to see you'll see this more and more as the months go by, the fence kind of being pulled in a little bit around certain guys. In February, Ole Miss throwing offers out all over the country. More than 50 offers go out from coast to coast that month. Now you're starting to see the guys who may have some genuine interest. I crystal balled a couple to Ole Miss last night. One, a linebacker from Tennessee named Jacob Phillips that they've been on for the longest of time. From what I'm hearing, Jacob is leaning towards Ole Miss. He has not said that publicly, but that's kind of what the intel is right now. And then I had a good conversation with a California defensive end last night named DJ Johnson, 4-star out of Sacramento. DJ named Ole Miss's leader last night. He'll be visiting Oxford this summer. He's got some kin folks over in Louisiana, so there's a little southern connection there. He is a 4-star, 247 Sports has him rated as the number 11 weak side defensive end in the nation. So you'll start to see the fences kind of being pulled in a little bit over the next several months, and we'll get a better idea of exactly who Ole Miss is kind of zoning in on and who has the most interest in Ole Miss as they continue to assemble this 2017 recruiting class. Well, that's going to do it for us today on this edition of Rebel Rise Live. If you're listening anywhere in the South, we hope you stay dry, stay safe. There's a lot of flooding going on out there today. For Dave Bevan and Michael Quirk, who is en route to the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee, as we speak, I'm David Johnson for 247 Sports. And as always, hotty toddy.